Welcome to the Insurance Brokers Podcast with your host, Sarah Myerscough. This business podcast is for ambitious brokers determined to grow their business. Our guests are highly experienced industry experts and innovators. This is the place to leverage their success, learn how to break through barriers to growth, and discover a community of support and ideas whilst growing your business.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Insurance Brokers Podcast with me, Sarah Myerscough. On this episode, we are delighted to be speaking to Kevin Hancock, whose insurance career has spanned over 30 years in the industry. Amongst senior management roles, Kevin has also built Yewtree Insurance and Underwriting from a blank sheet of paper, and he firmly believes in the client-centric approach, which are the foundations of all Yewtree business decisions. Kevin's involvement in the CII and BIBA give him extensive reach into the industry, which he uses to support and shape the development of the insurance and broking world. Hello, Kevin. Thank you very much for joining us on the Insurance Brokers Podcast today. I'm quite excited to have you on and hear what you've got to say.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really pleased to be speaking to people.
Fabulous. Firstly, congratulations, Yewtree, on being awarded chartered status last year.
Yeah, so we got it July last year. It was one of the things when we first set up the business that we wanted to aim for. It took a little while for us to get everyone to the level of qualification that they needed to get to. But actually, it was good to get there, to get over the line. And now, actually, it gives us a really good platform for moving the business on.
Yeah, fab. Is it quite a difficult process to go through? I've heard different things.
So there's a scoring mechanism according to the level of qualifications throughout the business and for the client-facing advisors, and we just needed to get one or two more people through their exams. Once you've done that, then actually it's really straightforward. If for any reason that you can't get enough people through their exams, you can do other stuff that kind of enhances your reputation and actions within the profession. So it's not just about qualifications, but that's certainly a big part of it.
And is it ACII that you're generally aiming for?
So there has to be, at least one ACII in the business or other significant qualification that's equivalent. But actually, we just felt that we wanted to get more and more qualified people in the business because it means that our brokers are giving better advice. And for us, that means that the customer is getting a better result at the end of the transaction.
That's fabulous. I'm halfway through my dip at the moment, and I've got the coursework to do, and it's the economics one.
Okay.
And
that was actually my favourite because it was something that I studied earlier in life. The one that seems to trip people up most is the law one.
And insurance law. My previous life is a lawyer.
Right,
so okay. I love the insurance law one.
Yeah. So internally, that was the one that we had to give people most support on. And I think the key when you're doing the exams is actually to find someone that can help you. I think by the time you've left school and college and uni and everything else, you've kind of forgotten what you need to do to answer questions in the right way. So we've got one or two people that will help people both internally and externally. Just say, okay, read the question, do all of the things that you were taught as a sort of 14, 15-year-old, but actually try and translate what you're learning academically to what's going on in the real world and have real examples and case studies. So it's not just trying to absorb what's in the book. It's finding those mechanisms of learning that actually work for you. So I would always say to someone, try and buddy up with someone as a mentor.
I like that idea. I like that idea a lot. One of my thoughts on life is mentorship, and I think everybody should have a mentor in every area of their life. So
yeah, and I think it's one of those things that when you've had a decently long career, that probably there's a bit of responsibility to try and help people that are still coming up and learning, because otherwise, your knowledge and experience kind of gets a bit wasted. And I think it's good to share it.
How important do you think it is as the MD of a broker to make sure your client-facing staff do go through these exams, even if it's not to ACII level, but there's a progression path?
I generally think it's critical. And we're a commercial broker that needs people to understand the wider world of business, as well as compliance and the market. Now, there's so much you can learn by experience, but actually to match your experience with something that's a bit more academic just gives people that foundation that they know they're saying the right things, they know they're making the right decisions, and they know they're offering the right advice to the client. So, yeah, I think it's absolutely what we should do. I think equally there are some people in the client advice kind of pyramid that they don't need to study forever and ever. You know, they might be in a role where as long as they know the basics of insurance, then that's fine. They can stop and they don't need to keep progressing through the exams. But for those that have ambition, those that want to really build a career in this profession, I would say to anyone, get your exams as early as you can. Keep studying even when you don't want to. And then you'll look back at that when you're in your 30s, 40s and think, actually, I'm glad I kind of got it out of the way. And then the next challenge, of course, is CPD, making sure that you're constantly keeping up to date with everything. Because, again, it's all too easy just to kind of rest on your laurels and say, right, I've ticked that box. So, yes, the CPD is equally as important.
Do you have a kind of company policy in place that monitors your staff in terms of their CPD and their exams and timescales and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's something that we look at. I personally look at it on a monthly basis for me, but for our staff, we look on a quarterly basis. And we are big advocates and supporters of both BIBA and the CII locally as well as nationally. So we use the resources of those organisations, but also the insurers. We invite the insurers into our business to help with learning. So we have a lunch and learn programme. So that every month someone will come in and share knowledge with the staff. So, and we try and mix that up. So technical skills, also some soft skills, just so that people have a fairly rounded and broad education.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen quite a few times there's an aim to get to chartered status, but no process in place. And I think process follows through everything, doesn't it? So
yeah, absolutely. And it, I suppose I don't like it because it's a bit corporate, but if it's not measured, it might not happen. Mm. So you kind of do have to just make sure some of this stuff is being done. And actually, probably the biggest thing that we learned going through the chartered sort of review process was that people were very happily achieving their CPD goals. And the one thing they were missing out was that kind of reflective statement. What am I going to do with the knowledge now I've got it? Or how am I going to carry on improving? And actually, that was a bit that we did have to do a bit of work on. But ultimately, that's the kind of, you know, you've got the process of learning. You've now got to make sure that you implement that learning. So actually, it's perfectly valid to kind of ask people to spend some time just to think about what they've learned.
I think the reflective part is the part that's often missed in processes across the board.
Yes.
At every different level.
Yes.
Because it's the bit that's really requires some thinking and sometimes is a little bit over-facing. I know I've done it before.
Yeah, and it's a bit personal. And so you're not kind of just kind of getting over the line with something. You're exposing a bit of your soul. And I think some people might find that just a tiddly bit intrusive. But nevertheless, it's still something that needs to be done and kept up to date.
I'm reading a book at the moment, which is brilliant. It's called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of it, but I've not read it.
It's really, really good. I haven't even got to the first habit yet. I'm still in the intro bit, which is quite thick. But one of the parallels he draws is people's belief system. So your version of reality is made up of your experiences and is not always correct. Everybody has their own version of, correct's the wrong word, everybody has their own version of reality and they may be looking at the same thing and seeing something completely different. And the parallel he draws is, if you're in Chicago and you want to get to point X, but you're looking at a map of Detroit, it doesn't matter how skillful you are, you're not going to get there because your map's wrong. And he uses the map analogy for your kind of belief paradigm. And I've given a lot of thought to that in my particular life and I have had some epiphanous moments from it. But I think that's one of the problems with reflective statements is you can be in the wrong track to be able to reflect properly.
Yeah, and I think as the kind of, you know, the reviewer of those statements, sometimes you can spot that either something hasn't quite gone in the right way. I've got a bit of a sort of a trite saying, which is very similar to what you've just said, is you know, if someone will say, you know, how do I get to X? It says, well, it just depends where you're starting from.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we need to understand if someone is doing some learning on, say, law or economics, okay, you know, just let's just chat about what do you understand about the subject? Because either you're starting from base zero or you might be halfway up the mountain. And actually how a mentor might help you depends on you don't be teaching people to suck eggs, do you, if they're already up there. So no, I agree with that. It's completely making sure that you've got the right tools and that your learning matches your experience. Mm.
And therein lies the big difference between leadership and, I want to say management, but I don't mean it in a negative way.
Yeah.
But you manage processes, you lead people, and sometimes the two get slightly mixed up.
Yeah.
But it's about understanding that person, their starting position, their particular mental maps.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're all better and worse at it at different times, depending on our own pressures and stresses and processes and everything else. So yeah,
whether you've been kept up all night by kids or
exactly
not.
Right, and yeah, or you know, you've got something you really must do, but you kind of forget that the person who's asking for help really needs your help, and you know. So I think leaders and managers also need to understand your own priorities, but other people's priorities as well, because I think sometimes you can be a bit selfish. I can be a bit selfish.
I don't know many people that can't.
Yeah. So.
No, I think that's really interesting. You kind of touched on this, but the whole process of chartered status, what was your biggest challenge?
I think for us, it was actually a relatively straightforward process. So we signed up to the original Oldenbury Declaration, which was that commitment to get chartered. So it was relatively straightforward. The one thing that I think is more difficult and less tangible is to actually see clearly what the business is getting out of being chartered. And also, you know, whilst the clients will be getting better advice, you know, you kind of don't know what would have happened in the alternative universe. So it's probably more about measuring the benefits is the most difficult bit. Kind of getting to the line was fine. It's now we're over the line. It's making sure that it's kind of worthwhile for everybody. And I think that's probably the most difficult bit. And I think with my CII hat on, I think it's something that the CII also recognise. You know, clearly it's a good thing that people improve their learning and that corporates encourage that and corporate charter status is something to aim for. But equally it's to understand the why. And I think that's, difficult to articulate.
Mm. Like so many things in business I'm learning.
Yes.
The intangibles.
Yeah.
Are actually, Charles Handy's another author that I really rate. And one of the things that he said is, when something can't be measured, we tend to not measure it and then just forget it's there.
Okay.
And actually that gives you sometimes a skewed perception on what it is you're looking at. Education being primary example.
Yes.
You get kids through the exam, you measure on a set of rights, wrongs, yes, no, A, B, C, D. But you can't measure all of the intangible learning, the kindness, the emotional intelligence and
yeah.
all of that kind of stuff. And that actually sometimes, often, is more important than the whether you got an A star in maths or not. I don't think they do A stars anymore. I think it's
it's a nine or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a 10. But yeah, and if only I understood the system. And I think you're right. And I think there are systems, both in kind of, you know, in business life and in politics that, you know, you might end up just measuring the wrong things, which leads to the wrong outcomes or outcomes that are unhelpful. So, so I think you have just got to keep questioning back in business, are we measuring the right things? But probably more important, it is that kind of, are the behaviours right? You know, is it all about putting the customer in the centre of the relationship, putting the staff in the centre of that relationship, and actually, you know, trying to marry all of that with shareholder value is sometimes, you know, it's a difficult balance. But unless you're doing things in a customer-centric way and a staff-centric way, then I would argue that perhaps you haven't got a sustainable business model. I'm sure there are people that would disagree. But for me, it's just about making sure that, you know, we're able and willing to do a good job for our customers. And that's really important to us as a business.
It must give you a much wider perspective, being that you've got your MD of an insurance broker, you've also got the underwriting arm, you've also been heavily involved in Beaver, you've also, you know, you mentioned your CII hat, so you've got so many different hats, which I can imagine is a challenge at times, but also gives you a really...
It's a massive benefit. It's so from a business point of view, we've got our what we call our retail, our direct-to-customer part of the business, and we've got our underwriting agency. And we're just seeing at the moment there's a hardening of the market, so the market cycle works slightly differently for an underwriting agency compared with a commercial broker. So it gives us some resilience, and that's something that you know we've learnt over 30 years, that actually you can soften the peaks and the troughs by having that bit of spread. The reason initially I got involved with Beaver and more recently CII is exactly that reason. Is A, it creates a network of people who become friends that you can call upon when you need them, whether that be for, you know, kind of informal advice or just to share ideas or one thing or another. But also you can see kind of at first hand just the different ways people do things. So, you know, all of us kind of potentially work in our silo of our own business. And actually by having those conversations around the table about, you know, how other people would tackle a particular problem, issue, client group, sector, whatever else it is, actually you can see that there are, you know, there's more than one way of dealing with that particular opportunity or problem. So I think I've kind of done this stuff for 20 years now, gosh, with Beaver and the CII. And initially it felt as though you were giving time without necessarily getting anything tangible back from it. And then you realize as time goes on that actually it's a really positive influence on the way you think about stuff. So, you know, have we won business directly as a result of being involved with Beaver and CII? Yes. But I think the bigger benefit is actually that thought leadership piece, that you're mixing with people that are at the top of the profession. Our relationships with insurers for a business of our size, I think our relationships with insurers are way, you know, we're punching way above our weight. Just because we're kind of at that, dare I say, the top table in that sort of networking and profession sense. So, you know, if we want to achieve something for a client, or if there's a problem with something with a client, then I just think that we're better placed to be able to help those clients. So, you know, and again, that's kind of the intangible bit until you need to call upon it. So, yeah, the time invested in those things, I think, has got sort of payback, but it's payback that kind of comes over the years rather than on one defining moment.
It's almost self and business development, like you say, on an intangible level.
Yeah.
Which, again, just because it can't be measured doesn't mean it shouldn't be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think probably one of the things that I would say to anyone, whether or not you're in broking, claims, underwriting, but any part of the profession, is actually put yourself forward for a bit of this kind of networking, this kind of, you know, get involved with your local CII Institute or your Beaver region or whatever else it is, because you'll meet people along the way that at some point in the future you can be of help to them and they to you, and you just won't know it at the time. Whereas if you kind of keep yourself in your box, in your office, you don't know what you don't know. So I think that kind of that broader networking and let's call it giving back, you know, the profession is good for us. So if we can give something back to the wider profession on a local or regional level, you will get that self-development and, you know, that benefit of having a different perspective. Really, really important.
Just on the, we've touched on it, the future, the way things are going, market's hardening, but like you said, it's slightly different from a broking to an underwriting perspective. Where do you see the future of underwriting? And same question to broking, given the advances in technology Amazon particularly.
Sure. Interesting. So I'll deal with Amazon and AI and that kind of stuff. I'm pretty convinced they'll be in the market, but I think that there is, at the moment, the thing that we struggle with as an industry is for the customer to understand the value of advice. So let's say you're buying private car insurance. You might easily think of going to, you know, one of the marketplaces online rather than going to a broker. And again, by self-serving in that way, you don't know whether or not you're getting a policy that is good value, or actually it's being stripped right back, and to add the cover back in, you end up paying more than you would have done in the first place. You go to a broker, you will get advice and you will get people helping you when you need them, whether or not it's to make a claim or something's gone, hopefully not wrong, but you know, you need some help with something. And very frequently, even though we're not in that personal lines market particularly, I get people that I know saying, I bought this online and it hasn't worked. What can I do? And if they've gone to a specialist broker or a local broker, they wouldn't be in that predicament. So I think the AI bit will help people to fulfill the ability to purchase insurance, but whether or not that's a good and strong purchase, only time will tell. And I think the bit that we should all be worried about, I guess, is if the AI starts being clever enough to also understand people's needs better and therefore start offering advice. And I think that will be the thing that makes AI and the Amazons of this world successful. I think the future of underwriting, it's really interesting. So, you know, we have an underwriting agency. We have capacity with small and large insurers, and our broker partners are both small and large brokers. And you think, often one of the questions that a capacity provider and insurer will say to us is, you know, so why are you selling a, let's say, an Aviva product to one of our brokers who deals with Aviva? What is it that you're doing better than we can do? And I think within what we do, it's always about, it's understanding the niche better than a general underwriter does. But also, I just think that we can be more nimble. So I think we can be better at distribution. I think we can be better at service delivery. You know, we can, if someone asks us for a quote today, we can give them the response today, and actually they can go on cover and have everything bound today or within 24 hours. And I think many insurers still struggle with that. So either the insurers continue to improve, which I'm sure they will, and in the meantime, people like us will thrive because people want quick answers and quick distribution. So the other thing that's true in a hardening market is that those underwriters in a niche are more useful to more people. So if you've got a niche where your product is kind of perceived as being difficult as far as broker or client is concerned, well, it's just what you do. So it's not difficult to you. You just get on and do it and you deliver something, and actually they, you know, the customer says, well, actually that was easy, not difficult. So our job is to kind of try and make things easier. From a broking perspective, I think the future, I think the future is really bright, but I'll just talk about our business. So our business is entirely relationship based and advice driven. So for us, it's all about being very close to the client, very close to understanding exactly what they need and want, what's going on in their business, what might be coming up in their business, and anticipating that with them. And therefore, we're able to be a true professional partner sitting alongside them as they kind of go through their year or further ahead than that. So I think that I hope that we're very proactive with our customers. And I think the danger is that you become reactive and transactional. So I think successful brokers, I mean, people have been talking about the death of the independent broker for probably 30 years or more. Surprisingly enough, we're a resilient bunch and we keep popping up and we keep thriving. And I think it's all because, again, we can be more nimble in terms of how we work with our customer rather than kind of commoditizing the customer. So, yeah, I think that's how we...
That's very interesting, that commoditizing versus customer-centric, because, as you know, the people that I'm talking to, that those are polar opposites to kind of way of thinking.
And it's different business model, and I'm not saying the other model is wrong.
No, no.
That's what works for them, but... Actually, you know, if we come across a piece of business that's transacted in that way, then we can rub our hands with glee, and that's where we pick a good chunk of new business up from. But I think, you know, some of the consolidators, you know, do seem to work in that way.
It's very process-driven and very target-led on every possible way you could manage that. And I was at a broker network meeting a while ago, and they were talking about renewals and how to get your renewal up to about 110%. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially through various add-on sales and premium credit, value added, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And somebody asked the question that was, how do you justify premium credit targets versus this treat the customer fairly? How do you do that? And the answer given was great. And it's when it's in the client's interest, they might have more than one policy. It might be help, all of that kind of stuff. But it's not just semantics. It's indicative of a mentality that sits behind the words and the process and the way of thinking. And I think that's quite an I'm finding it quite interesting in talking to you and talking to some of the consolidators like I have been. Just that mind shift is...
Yeah, and we, you know, equally we want to be profitable, and we want to make sure that we're running, you know, a sound business that's got, you know, a huge amount of longevity. And for us, the best way of doing that is to make sure that we renew as many of our customers year on year as possible. And we've chosen to do that by making sure that they get, you know, the best advice that we can give them. Do we try and sell them extra products? I'm not sure that we use that language. I think what we do is we try and look at what the client needs, at least on an annual basis. So is their insurance program still appropriate? And, you know, new products come along. Cyber over the last 4, 5, 6 years is a good example where actually that wasn't a risk that people were worried about and should be. Particularly should feel exposed to. Whereas these days, you know, it's kind of, we're getting bombarded with threats literally every day. We spoke to a group of clients probably 18 months or so ago now, and we were talking about the subject matter, and we asked for a show of hands for those that insured their premises for fire. And everyone put their hand up. It was great. And then we said, so keep your hand up if you think that your premises are at risk of burning down this week. And they'll put the hand down. Okay, so you're insuring for something that you think is very unlikely. Okay, I get that. And then you ask the same question of a cyber attack. And you get the direct opposite reaction. And that's the thing, it's a shift. So when people say about sort of selling more products, I think it's about understanding people's risk exposures and closing those risk exposures. It has the same effect, but, you know, you talk about selling a product, it's, for me, you're slightly doing it for the wrong reasons.
The mental paradigm, the map.
Yes.
The map is going towards different places, but taking the same route.
Yes.
And, I like that.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you have enjoyed what you have heard, have any questions or feedback, please leave us a review and we will be sure to get back to you. If you would like further information on how Boston Tullis Group can support your business, or if you would like to join us on an episode, please do not hesitate to contact us.